Melissa, I'm coming. Did you indicate? Is there any indication?
I'm sure he's going to join us, Chairperson, because normally if he's not going to join us, he submits an apology well in advance.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday in the... Okay. And Honorable Mama Rakhane?
Mama Rakhane, Honorable Mama Rakhane submitted an apology, Chairperson. There's a bereavement in the family.
Okay.
Yes.
Okamp, I think he's still
coming. I'm sure Mr. Okamp, I'm sure he's going to join us, Mr. Njato, Mr. Mkiva, and all other members.
Yeah. Okay,
Njato's
still at the WIPS forum. Morning.
Yes.
And there's a guest there with the alphabet N-O. Is those initials or is it no?
I'm sorry, it's Nelia, Dr. Nelia Olandi.
I suspect
it's Dr. Nelia Olandi.
Oh, it's the initials, okay.
Yes.
Is it going to be live? For that member, alerted to be...
No one alerted me, Chairperson, from my colleagues who are responsible for television, sir. So
But it's still going to be recorded.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes if it's not live on TV, it's live on YouTube, sir, or on Facebook.
Okay.
Yes. So it's like anyway.
Okay. One parliament.
Morning, Putoban. Good morning, Mr. Mateza.
Do we have provinces? Have we invited provinces?
No, not this time around, Chairperson. No.
Okay.
Luckily, we are practicing social distance.
Oh, sorry.
My computer's antivirus is quite good, Chair.
Chairperson? Hello, Chair?
Hello.
Hello, Chair. I've just called my colleague that I was liaising with, who works with Minister Lamine. So he's going to alert her that you have been like trying to draw
Minister
her.
Minister Lamine is here. Minister Lamine is here.
Chairperson, over to you. Thank you, Minister. Chairperson, over to you. You can start your meeting now. It's almost 9 o'clock from my side. So over to you, Chair.
Good morning, Minister. Honorable Minister. Good morning.
Hello.
How are you, Minister?
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you, Chair?
I'm happy to see you. I've been trying. I saw your name and I've been trying to raise my voice to the highest to call for your attention. But
okay.
I thought the both connected to you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable members, can we start? I think we're 9 o'clock on the dot. Something might happen, honorable members. You know, I've experienced this week, I've been experiencing the problem of the connectivity, and we are expecting load sharing. If that happens, I have requested the Honorable Mkiva to take over. Let me take this opportunity to greet all honorable members present here, including Honorable Minister Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma and her entourage, Minister Thokozile Diza and her entourage. We also are expecting her to be part of the meeting. We also have a team from Human Science Research Council. They are also welcomed. The team from Treasury, you are also welcome. The support staff, the media, all the stakeholders present here, you are welcome and feel free to participate in this meeting. And honorable members, I don't think it's necessary, but I just want to ask to remind each other that we keep our mics muted. If you are not, we are not talking, unless you are on the platform. Honorable members, can you still hear me? I was off for a moment.
We can hear you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Honorable Minister, once more, I want to thank you for availing yourself to find time to come and discuss and empower us, clarify issues with us as the Select Committee on Appropriation. From your busy schedule. I also want to thank the Honorable Minister Thokozile Diza for also availing herself. I think she's still on her way, or she might be on the line. I haven't checked her yet lately. Honorable members, the purpose for this meeting, especially to Minister Dr. Dlamini Zuma and Minister Thokozile Diza in HRC. The reason why we requested your availability is because of three things that in this committee of in this select committee, they have been raised since last year, somewhere October, November. So we felt and decided as a committee that we might be having lesser information or needing that empowerment from yourself and clarity from yourself. Hence, we decided to request you to come and address us on issues that are happening. And those things, they started since we were discussing the budget and the medium-term budget policy statement. The third thing that I'm talking about, honorable ministers, is the it also includes the negotiating mandate from the provinces, because usually when we have our meetings as a select committee, we invite provinces to come and participate and also FALGA, the local government. So the issue of the droughts is one of the things that has been raised several times, if not every meeting that we are meeting, that the drought has been an issue. There has been a declaration of drought as a disaster in some provinces. There's been commitments, and some issues have not been addressed. The other thing is the government support to farmers. And the third issue is the food security. I think that one deals directly with the Department of DATLA. And since then, we have been discussing these issues, and we have decided that maybe we need to be empowered. We need your indulgence in this matter, Honorable Ministers. Members, let me not waste any more time, because ESCOM has just decided to disband me or reject me. I might not be in the list throughout, but there's someone in standby. Members, I think you will agree with me that these three areas that I have identified above are interrelated. And the information that we are about to receive from our leaders, from the members of the executive, the executive members and the accounting officers and the officials from different departments and institutions will have a very good and huge impact on us. Members, let me take this opportunity and check with the secretariat if we have apologies, and we will then be dealing with them officially and be on record. Secretariat, apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we have received one apology from the committee from Honorable Mama Rakhane. As I indicated, Mama Rakhane has got a bereavement in the family. Excuse me. Then I also received an apology from Honorable Minister Tikiza. I'm sure maybe it slipped your mind. Yes. Then apologies from Deputy Minister Bapela, Deputy Minister Tau, Deputy Minister Dlamini, and Deputy Minister Squasha Chairperson. So those are all the apologies that we received, Chair.
If you say Deputy Minister Dlamini,
yes, Chairperson. Tumo Dlamini apology, Chairperson. Yes, Chair. Yes, Chairperson.
We only have Honorable Minister Dlamini Zuma.
That's correct, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, those are the apologies. Well, screening, I've just indicated that, members, unless you have a problem with raise your hand or indicating, we have behind-the-scene members who will be assisting you if you want to talk. You either indicate on the chat or you indicate through raise your hand. But can I find out who is that wants to speak? Lubabalo?
Chairperson, I see no one who has raised their hand, Chair.
But there was someone who said hello.
Maybe a person, a colleague made a mistake and forgot to mute the mic, Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, with those honorable members, can we deal with the apologies? Honorable Eunice Karim?
What do you want from me, Chair?
Can we deal with the apologies, that we accept apologies and whatever that you want to raise? And in addition, before you do that, honorable members, Honorable Njadu will be joining us in due course. He's attending a WITS Forum meeting. Yes, sir?
No, I don't have anything to say. I'm here. I'm a bit confused. What are you expecting from me? Sorry.
Any other person who wants to speak on honorable members, you don't have anything that you want to raise, you're fine. We accept the apologies.
Oh, yeah, if you want to for the apologies, I'm moving for them. Yes, sir. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Ryder, you are also fine. Detroit?
Yes, Chair.
Honorable Detroit?
I'm fine, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Without further ado, can I, with due respect, hand over to Honorable Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma to do her presentation, and also members, please, let me, I just forgot this to say this. She, Honorable Minister, might not be with us throughout the meeting, because there's a cabinet meeting today that needs her attention. But we appreciate that she's here. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee on Appropriation, Honorable Mashlangu, and all the honorable members and the officials and other ministers who are there. Let me just say that, you know, today is unfortunate because all the ministers who gave apologies, they are also in this cabinet, because it's cabinet committee time, and we all belong to the same cabinet committee that's sitting now. So that is the unfortunate part, and that's why even myself, I just thought, since the first time you're asking me to come to your committee, I must ask to be excused for a short time so that I can also go back, but at least show that I'm willing to work with you.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for this opportunity. And of course, this meeting is happening when we are engulfed, not just with the drought, but also with the COVID. So at some stage we were dealing with two disasters, the drought and the pandemic. So I will not take too much of your time, except to say that in terms of the drought, we do have the DG and we do have Dr. Dow, who are going to give all the details. But we have worked with the relevant minister during this time and the relevant provinces where droughts have been declared. And of course, the funds that we have, limited as they are, they do have, the provinces do have to give us their plans so that it triggers the release of funds. But the officials will give you all the details. But I also want to say that it's going to be important going forward, because we know we're a water scarce country, to work not only on relief measures, but also to build resilience so that we can be able to cope with droughts. And of course, some parts of our country may be having floods. We should learn from countries that have been able to build resilience around the issues that affect them. If you think, for instance, of Cuba, which is on the hurricane corridor, they are able to deal with the hurricane with sometimes, most of the time, with no loss of lives and livelihoods, despite them facing potentially catastrophic storms and hurricanes. And of course, they've built resilience over time. Sometimes, of course, they lose livelihoods, but it's rare that they lose lives because of that. So without wasting too much time, I'll be here for a while, but I think it's better if I ask the officials to present the exact details so that if you have initial questions, I can still be here. So if you don't mind, I will ask Dr. Dao, who is in charge of the Disaster Management Center, to then give us a proper presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Dr. Dao, I think 15 minutes maximum will be fine for you. You'll be fine with that.
Yes, Chairperson, I will endeavor to deliver the presentation within that particular time. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity and for the minister to set the scene on this matter. I'm going to make this quick presentation on behalf of my DG, Ms. Avril Williamson, who is also online. The outline of the presentation, Chairperson, in line with the brief that we have been given is highlighted there. I would request that we go to the next slide. In terms of the purpose, we would be briefing the select committee on the disaster management programs, budgets and expenditure as per the brief. We will also reflect on drought relief programs with respect to budget and expenditure also. We also want to highlight progress on some of the innovative measures that we are putting in place to ensure streamlined funding arrangements for disaster risk management in line with Enabler 3 of the disaster management framework, so that we are able to fund disaster management issues across the whole resilience value chain that the minister has alluded to. We will conclude with some slides on lessons learned from COVID, as it also has a bearing on how we deal with the disaster risk management value chain in totality. Next slide. We want, as an introduction, just to share the objective of the National Disaster Management Center. As you can see there, this is drawn from Section 9 of the Disaster Management Act. The center is mainly required to promote an integrated and coordinated system of disaster management. And what is very important, which needs to be emphasized in the context of resilience for drought and any other hazards, is that the focus should be on prevention, preparedness, and mitigation by all role players, state and non-state entities. And for the NDMC to achieve this role, it must perform the following functions. They are listed there: is to develop and strengthen and manage regulatory frameworks and institutional arrangements. This is basically to ensure that we bring on board all relevant role players and develop the necessary instruments that guide them in dealing with any hazards, being it drought, being it floods, being it thunderstorms, and so on and so forth. Secondly, promote capacity building, and this will be seen in our organogram. Also awareness, education and training and research. Thirdly, promote disaster reduction through well-coordinated and integrated planning processes. This is to ensure that national, provincial and municipal organs of state, including private entities, must have disaster management plans that ensures that they implement disaster risk management value chain to ensure resilience. We also guide and develop comprehensive information management and communication systems so that we can be able to have databases, we can be able to have intelligence that enables us to plan with an understanding of the dynamics, the risk dynamics on the ground, so that our plans are always proactive. And of note, Chairperson and Honorable Members, is the fact that in addition to the National Disaster Management Centers, disaster management centers must also be established at provincial and municipal levels in terms of those sections. Next slide. This is the conceptual architecture of implementing the disaster management function, which the NDMC currently resemble. We firstly have to deal with institutional capacity issues. This, as I indicated earlier, is about developing plans and making sure that structures are in place, and we monitor whether provinces and municipalities and sector departments have capacity to implement the function. The second one is to do risk assessment nationally to check whether there are risks associated with hydrological, meteorological, or any other hazard that might affect the country. Thirdly is risk reduction. It's about those plans I've alluded to. And then fourth is the recovery, response and recovery arrangements. And then that must be supported by information management, training, education, and funding. But Chairperson, what is very important here in the context of drought is to look at where response and recovery is. Response and recovery must be the measure of last resort when you deal with risk, and we'll agree as the collective leadership that we should first build resilience by making sure that we have plans, implement those plans to prevent the occurrence of risks. It's only if we cannot prevent that we will then activate response arrangements. That is why, therefore, the question will always be whether X department, a particular province or a sector, an entity has got plans that ensure that they reduce risk without waiting for response arrangements. Next slide. I'm going to be quick from here, Chairperson, just to show how the NDMC is currently structured. Section 8 of the Disaster Management Act, as amended in 2015, required that and the National Disaster Management Center must be an institution within the public service. However, that process is currently being looked at. As it stands now, the NDMC is just a branch within the Department of Cooperative Governance. As you can see there, it's highlighted as number 3. Next slide. The NDMC is structured in that manner. We have got units that respond to that architecture that I've alluded to earlier. The first unit deals with disaster risk reduction, capacity building and interventions. The second one deals with legislation and policy management. This is about providing guidelines and ensuring that institutional arrangements are in place. Then the next one is integrated monitoring. It's also now covered under legislation and policy. And then we have another piece of legislation which is not the focus of this meeting. It's about fire services, which is about all fire brigade services in the country. We also have intelligence and information management, and finally, early warning and capability management as one of our units. Next slide. Then we are going to respond to the directly to the questions, Chairperson, from slide 9. Can we go to slide 9? In terms of those programs, firstly to state that we operate on a budget of about 67 million per financial year, and the head of the center, which is the office that I'm responsible for, which provides strategic leadership to the branch, has a total budget for this year of 24.054, because I'm also responsible for the nerve center. And you can see compensation of employees, goods and services, and our expenditure to date is at that amount. We are currently embarking on procurement processes. The next one is disaster reduction capacity building, which develop and implement disaster management operational systems and coordinate disaster management capacity building. It has got about 7.2 million, and the breakdown can be seen in the expenditure to date. The next one is legislation and policy management, which develops legislation, 5.9 million, and the expenditure can also be seen there. None of this money is earmarked for dealing with disaster occurrences. It's just for our operations. Next slide. The integrated monitoring, which currently operates as capacity building, has got 7.0 million. We can see the expenditure there. Fire services has got about 5.045, and we can also see expenditure. Next slide. Next slide, please. Information management and technology has got 18.4. This is because that's where we have got a lot of infrastructure issues around IT infrastructure, licensing for our systems, hence a huge budget on goods and services there, and the expenditure can also be seen there. Next slide. We also have an allocation, Chairperson, that is additional under goods and services that is meant for disaster evaluations. This is the allocation that we use when disasters have occurred, and they have been dealt with through budgets of other departments, but those departments have exhausted their allocations. Can be departments or provinces or municipalities, and now they request a national government to contribute. And we first then have to send a team of experts to go and evaluate and quantify the cost of the damaged infrastructure or services before any money can be requested from the contingency reserve. So that is the amount. And then in this slide, Chairperson, we just give an overview of what is available now to deal with disasters, being it drought and others. We have four types of grants. And as you can see, the amounts are very minuscule. The first grant is the Municipal Disaster Relief Grant. The second one is the Provincial Disaster Relief Grant. And the amounts per financial year are listed there, and we'll show expenditure later. We also have disaster recovery grants that are broken down into municipal disaster recovery grant and the provincial disaster recovery grant. Next slide. In terms of the municipal disaster recovery grant, disaster relief grant for 2020-21, we have 353 million. Of this money, 150.9 has already been allocated to municipalities, about 246 municipalities to deal with COVID. We have a balance of 202. This is meant for municipalities, honorable members. And then the provincial disaster relief grant, we had about 138 million. This has already been transferred to provincial departments of agriculture in the 7 provinces to deal with drought conditions, and implementation of these projects are currently is currently unfolding. It should be noted that the implementation is according to the districts. We can account for how much district has been allocated, and reports will be submitted according to each district as per the allocation, which has been informed by the risk profile of each district in the country. Next slide. Next slide. In this slide, Chairperson, we just want to indicate that the department, through the NDMC, we continue to promote integration and coordination of efforts within organs of state on drought interventions. And we also just reiterate that we have made funds available already to departments of agriculture, and that implementation is underway. We are also aware that Department of Water and Sanitation has also made funding available by reprioritizing their grants to cater for hydrological and socioeconomic drought within communities. Next slide. These are the amounts that have been allocated, broken down per province for that 138, Chairperson. I think this will help in terms of oversight to really see where these monies are and how they have been expended. I believe our colleagues that will talk after us will also make reference to this allocation. Next slide. Next slide. Slide 18, please. While I'm waiting for slide 18, Chairperson, I also just want to indicate that we hyperlinked documents that guides the regulates these grants in the form of the grant frameworks, so that honorable members are also able to read the allocations against the regulatory arrangements, which are the grant frameworks in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. We also want to state, honorable chair and members, that the municipal infrastructure grant has also been reprioritized to the tune of 104 billion towards drilling and equipping of boreholes in various provinces. And we can also provide a detailed breakdown on this. We have also supported the reprioritization of the Integrated Urban Development Grant to cater for water provision issues. Next slide. Next slide. There was an important question about the research project being undertaken to determine the current amount of resources allocation. Chairperson, how we respond to this is that we realize the need for sectors and provinces to commit to planning for and budgeting for disaster reduction, including drought measures in line with the prescript of the Disaster Management Act and the policy framework. So we are embarking on a process to come up with a funding model on the on disaster management, which will emphasize implementation of existing sector legislation on emergency and disaster-related matters, than to wait always for National Disaster Management Center to give out money. Because as we can see, that money is very little to cater for the needs. The second objective is to enhance efficiency and effectiveness of disaster funding arrangements and heighten realization of objectives of disaster grants and develop a suitable model for funding arrangements. So to this end, a critical aspect requiring amendments are being identified and inputs are solicited from identified stakeholders We are currently engaging various stakeholders. So this will involve extensive consultation that we are currently embarking upon, so that there's an appreciation of the need for all role players to be proactive and budget for and fund disaster risk management issues. Next slide. We also wanted to just share, Chairperson, the issue about compliance of provinces regarding disaster management in terms of establishing disaster management centers, because the capacity to implement disaster management at a particular province also determines the extent to which we are able to proactively deal with risk and build resilience in those provinces. We can see there that Eastern Cape, the head of center is acting, they have a disaster management advisory forum, they have a plan and it's being implemented. Disaster management framework is also in place. They've undertaken risk assessment. They also keep on submitting annual reports and so on and so forth. With your indulgence, Chairperson, I request not to go through each one of these, hoping that this has been read and we can engage when questions are taken. But it actually just gives us a picture, which should actually help when honorable members undertake oversight to assess the extent to which the province is capacitated to deal with risk in line with their mandate under the Disaster Management Act. Next slide. It's also about other provinces, so we can move to the next slide about COVID. We have learned a lot of lessons, which also should be lessons for dealing with other hazards. The first issue is that the Disaster Management Act has played a huge role in containing the COVID-19 pandemic infections and related fatalities by at least enabling our government to flatten the curve, implement the risk-adjusted strategy, and beyond that also for enhanced resilience or vigilance to COVID risk. And that through this act, we have seen a more responsive, integrated and coherent, agile government led by our cabinet, NCCC, and our minister playing a very critical role as the responsible cabinet member for disaster management. Three, government communications became accelerated and indeed bringing issues closer to the people. The taking up of technology like we are now using this platform. Number five, quality disaggregated data support effective evidence-based decision-making, because at municipal level, provincial level, the command structures are able to report to national level on the activities, and this informs decisions at national level, and also the structures that are led by our president and his cabinet. Six, the need to ramp up awareness on the need for social behavioral change has been one of the critical elements. The need to strengthen enforcement of restrictions. Eight, self-regulatory becomes vital. And of course, nine, the district development model as an important mainstay for successful implementation of COVID-19 vigilance. These lessons, Honorable Chair and members, can be read in the context of dealing with any disaster, because a disaster management function is an intergovernmental function, is a developmental function that must be integral to the daily work of any organization. In conclusion, therefore, Chairperson, we state that disaster risks, including COVID-19 pandemic, must be addressed through practical and targeted measures across all spheres of government, and that Section 25 calls for all national sectors to develop plans to deal with disaster management, and Section 38, 52, and 53 calls for provincial sectors and municipal sectors to also develop disaster management plans. And those are the questions that we should repeatedly ask our provincial and municipal role players as to whether they have disaster management plans so that we don't get to act when there's a disaster incident. We're able to proactively reduce risk. We have hyperlinked here a guideline for developing disaster management plans so that that can also be read in the context of the sections of the Act. There is therefore a need, Honorable Chair, members, to optimize the implementation of this piece of legislation by ensuring that the risks associated with hazards such as drought, which are negatively affecting our communities, are reduced. So reduction of risk is a very crucial measure that we should prioritize. Next slide. In conclusion, Chairperson, we would like to submit the following recommendations: that the committee knows the briefing on the three issues that have been covered, and that the committee provides support on the enhancement of, obviously, human resource capacity and funding arrangements for disaster risk management in the country. On that note, Chairperson and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Dr. On your last slide, recommendations, we will have one. It should be one and two. Two recommendations. Just a slight correction. Thank you very much, honorable members of the committee. I was of the opinion that we are going to allow all three presentations to be presented, and then when we discuss them, we deliberate, we engage on them, three of them, because they interlink. But I'm a little bit held back now because Minister Dlamini has to go to cabinet. But as she said that she has requested permission, I think she can still be with us until we are done with the other two presentations. The thing is they interlink, and we don't want to do half-time job. Honorable Minister, what is your take on that?
Okay, I'll stay, and my colleagues will stay for me other time.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. The Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform. Who's leading?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Mduduzi Shabane. I'm the DG of the department. DDG Ramasoti will be leading on the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just a reminder, please switch on your video as you present. Even if there's a slide on the screen, your video must be on. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think we've lost you again.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Sorry for that slight miscommunication between us. The presentation is done by Dr. Khagazi. He is the Acting Chief Director who's responsible for natural resource management within the department. Dr. Khagazi, kindly take the presentation through.
Okay, Doctor.
Good morning, Honorable Minister. Good morning, Honorable members, DGs, and colleagues.
Sorry, Doctor, 15 minutes. I'm going to time you.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'll try to be quick. The presentation is exactly in line or aligned to what Dr. Tau has already said. I'll be trying to be zooming on the sector, the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, including to the provincial department. Can you go to the next slide? This is the outline that I'll be trying to be focusing as per request from the Select Committee on Appropriation. Next slide. Next slide. The Department of Agriculture at national, including at provincial level, we facilitate the disaster risk management through the established directorate that I'm leading in. And this needs to be translated down to provincial level as per Disaster Management Act. the provincial sectors need to establish the capacity that fulfill the role of disaster risk reduction. And they need to be able to allocate some funding for disaster risk reduction. As Dr. Tau was emphasizing, that the focus really of the Disaster Management Act is to really look at the disaster risk reduction. And really the lesser focus is on post-disaster reduction. Next slide. Next slide.
Just go on. It will find you on your way. Use your slides.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
So that it doesn't eat on your time.
Okay. No, thanks. The province, as we always emphasize, that they must first prioritize their budget to address the unforeseeable disasters. This is already been put there in a PFMA for them to allocate a certain percentage of these unforeseeable disasters. At national level, we coordinate disaster relief funding on behalf of the province through the Disaster Management Center. As Dr. Dao was saying, when this is being channeled through them, they will then send experts to evaluate and assess the disaster as being requested by the province. The next slide. The presentation that we are having here, I'm going to give an overview of the funding disaster management at national level. The national department provides financial support to provinces on request and based on availability of funding. At national level, before we really look at what we have, we also prioritize. Let's look at such as when there's a drought, there's funding, development program that is funded. At national level, we also have to prioritize if the province has been requested funding. But besides that, there are three sort of main sources that we are funding just at national level. We are having a land care program that is really implementing risk reduction measures on the ground. This is the funding ring fence from National Treasury. The only challenge is this funding is not really enough to deal with the whole nine provinces. The next one is the prevention and mitigation of disaster risk within the department. This funding also is also being made available through National Treasury to try to reduce the risk that the farming community might be faced with. Then the third one is the disaster relief funding. We normally have, if we are able to assist the province, we have to approach the National Disaster Management Center to approach National Treasury to give funding. They are having different funding, as Dr. Tau has really alluded. We also say the province are still also expected to look at the equitable share or even prioritize their budget if there is a disaster that okay and they are unable to avoid it. Next slide. As a sector, we are continuously threatened by the climatic conditions. Drought is one and has been ravaging the country for the past couple of years. Climate change, as you are aware of, is now currently exacerbating the situation. And we were warned a couple of weeks ago from the Office of the President that that we need to look at the adaptation strategy that has been approved, and the Act is on its way to really try to be addressing the climate change, and the sector need to really full take over and really lead on that one to make sure that the food security issues are addressed. During the recent years, the sector has suffered one of the worst recorded droughts, and resources were stretched to the limit, both national and provincial. And in 2020, the government declared national state of disaster. This is in line with the previous disaster that they declared, and they made an amount of 139 million available through the NDMC to the affected provinces. This is in addition to some of the provinces that already prioritized their funding to deal with the issues of drought relief. Western Cape, Northwest, and other provinces that were really in Benin, they did make their funding available to address those, in addition to that NDMC 139. In addition to this, provinces also have put measures that need to be put in place to reduce the risk, and we'll try to outline them in the next slide as they're coming. And also, at national level, encourage provinces to set aside that budget, as I've already mentioned, that to say as per act, we need to look on reducing the risk, and we need to make sure that we communicate this to the province, especially when you look at the issues of the drought. If the land is not enough and there is nothing on the ground, we need to make sure that the livestock on the ground is being reduced, and we need to look at the issues of nuclear production. That what are the strategies we need to be taking and making sure that we are implementing them. Next slide. This is the slide that will show the funding, 139 million, and how it has been spread to the identified seven provinces following the evaluation and assessment done by ourselves and the NDMC. And this is the drought spot that we identified to say, in this district, for this province, an amount of so much based on the availability of funds, this is how the funds were distributed. We'll see that in some provinces, there is still zero expenditure, but when the fund was transferred to the province had also a challenge of making sure that they implement this, because the provincial treasurer, they were unable to allow the sector to implement, because this has not yet been gazetted, and they had communicated to National Treasury, where they gave them the go-ahead to say, implement while this funding has not yet been gazetted. But also the issue of COVID, in most of the provinces we see when you are going to grant, they were not yet geared to start, but even if we are sure that agriculture was supposed to be implementing. But these are the things that some of the provinces have not yet fairly implemented, but they are already working on and implementing them. Next slide. This is the Mpumalanga and Northern Cape as well, where they've been giving them the money to be dealing with those further banks, irrigation clearing, Mpumalanga fencing and cutting, bailing out, and some, as we look at Northern Cape, that further transportation, because in some farmers they are making the further available and then they need to be transported to the needy farmers. Next slide. The provincial funding allocation at the department at national level engaged the province to obtain input on the funding and provincial disaster management programs. Some of the provinces provided the information while we are unable to get exactly what are they doing to deal with the disaster risk reduction, because that's part of dealing with the act itself to help programs on risk reduction being implemented on the ground. Next slide. This is the provincial funding allocations. As being made available by the province when they are prioritizing their funding. As I mentioned already, Northwest and Western Cape, and this is all the amount they did prioritize, an amount of 4 million from Northwest and Western Cape, 3.3 that already have spent, and they're still having some couple of million still available where they're implementing this funding. This is still the other district where they are also having made money available, 4.3 million in the Central Karoo and Cape Onlands, 209,000. And there's an expenditure and there's already zero balance. So this is effectively they have spent all their prioritized funding. And this is Garden Route Overberg, 2 million. This has been expanded as well. 3.4 West Coast. We see that in Western Cape, almost all the districts, the way budget has been made available to deal with that money. Limpopo as well, they did make some money available from their budget, 1.8 close to 2 million to deal with that. Free State, 6 million is made available to deal with the drilling of boreholes to address the stock water in this regulation. And in conclusion, Chairperson, what we are saying is the national disaster continues to threaten the livelihood of the farming community and the sector at large, and it's still a challenge to have budget allocated for disaster at provincial and local level. We are quite aware that we can't budget for disaster, but we can budget for risk reduction to make sure that we reduce this risk before it affected our farmers. The disaster management framework proposed that provincial disaster departments must set aside a certain percentage of funding towards risk reduction. And in generally, the country still has a long way to go in ensuring that this is is really achieved. There are other programs that we are implementing, climate smart agriculture, in making sure that we reduce the risk in the long term, as climate change sector plans have been requesting. And this sort of in line with Paris Agreement, that we need to look at the adaptation programs and making sure that in future all the sectors are able to survive during the hardship of the conditions. But funding in the long term normally becomes a challenge, that it might not really be enough to deal with all the hazards in addressing risk reduction. Chairperson, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
We now go to the next item. You were right on time. The CEO, I think, is the one who is leading the team from UMFAS Research Council. Is the CEO here? I haven't checked.
Yes, I'm here, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. You're welcome. You can take over. The stage is yours.
15 minutes or 20 minutes, Chairperson?
Which one do you want? Which one?
20, please.
20 is for 5. Thank you.
No, thank you. So you will be managing the presentation, and we'll just say next. Is that right, Chairperson?
Can you repeat what you said, CEO?
The presentation is being managed from your side, and we will just give an indication to you to say next, to put us onto the next slide. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, colleagues, for this opportunity to make this presentation. I'm joined here by my colleagues, Dr. Tokozani Simelani, Dr. Glenda Kruse, and Dr. Ilham Peterson, and we will share this presentation. We will try to get through these 33 slides, Chairperson, fairly quickly, so we won't delay your proceedings. So I will begin and hand over to Dr. Simelani soon. So the first slide here is just giving us an indication of what the global problem is here, Chairperson. We're dealing with a massive problem around the world. 800 million people are undernourished globally, and 90% of those people are concentrated in the rural areas of low-income and middle-income countries in Africa and Asia. Next slide, please, colleagues. So this slide here and the next slide gives us some indication of what the problem of vulnerability to hunger in South Africa is from 2002. These are statistics, Chairperson, that come from Stats SA. And as you can see in this slide here, the problem has improved, or our performance in relation to the problem has improved. But we still sit with, and this is the issue that we're having to confront, that over 6.8 million people in South Africa in 2017 were deemed to be vulnerable to hunger. And over 1.6 million households. Thank you very much. Next slide, please. And in terms of that, those figures, South Africa is classified as a food secure country, but the figures, as you can see, indicate a picture which is certainly something quite different. There is widespread hunger and malnutrition inside of the country, and of course these conditions are made and created by the unacceptably high unemployment rates that we have in the country and the rising poverty levels. Dr. Simelani will talk a little bit about how COVID is exacerbating these conditions. But it's important to note here that our economy went into a downward spiral a little later than the global trends, and they began to be reflected particularly strikingly after 2015. Next slide, please. This slide, Chairperson, and it's a slide which comes from data that we collected here at the Human Sciences Research Council on a national nutrition survey which we conducted in 2013. And we're going to be talking about future work which we are going to be doing for the former DAS. And now, I don't know, you use the expression to summarize the new name for the department, Chair, I haven't got it on the tip of my tongue, Chairperson, but we're going to be doing work shortly. But the point that I want to make here, and this point is going to be repeated in coming out of this presentation, is that we are short of data. The last definitive data that we were able to develop on nutrition was in 2013. With this nutrition survey that we did at that particular point. And what that survey indicated at that point was that there are pervasive challenges across the country, where almost a quarter of our urban population experiences hunger on a daily basis, a quarter. It gets worse when you come to informal settlements, 36.1% of the population in the rural informal, 20%, and rural informal up to 32%. Next slide, please. Urban food insecurity is a very poorly studied issue, but what the slide is beginning to indicate here is that there are portions, and particularly informal settlements of our country which are in real trouble. Look at the figure there for Orange Farm and Alexandra Park in Johannesburg, where 56% of households were food insecure in 2012. In Durban in 2015, amongst informal food traders, so you have people trading in food, and 90% of that particular segment of the population was food insecure. Next slide, please. So it's not as if government has done nothing in relation to this. And so in 2014, government adopted the National Policy on Food and Nutrition Security, a really important move to be making. We're going to be making some comments about that. But we have a problem. In relation to even this particular policy here, it is poorly coordinated. And this is the challenge which we, again, will emphasize repeatedly. We have a poor capacity to diagnose why our policies are not working. And the last point in relation to the problem that we're going to be emphasizing is that there are too many actors in the situation. There are too many institutions with conflicting mandates, the policy environment is fragmented. The next two slides, thanks. The next two slides give us a sense of how we should be dealing with this these particular issues. We had a very important policy brief, and we are really quite keen on these policy briefs being shared nationally, and we could make this policy brief available, Chairperson. And the next few slides build on and come out of this policy brief. What we're saying here is, and it's the last bullet in this particular slide, Chairperson, what the requirements are for a good policy. A good policy has to avoid, we are arguing, ad hoc, reactive, and disjointed government feeding and nutritional schemes. Now, it's not as if there isn't a place for schemes like this. These schemes are absolutely essential in emergency situations. but they're not appropriate for macro scale and an integrated and interdependent and national approach. Thanks very much. Next slide, please. So when you develop these policies, you have to be making sure that the policy substance is good in the first instance. You have to be very aware of the policy cycle we are arguing, how the policy cycle understands this question of implementation, and how the policy comes to a good analysis of the actors and the roles of the actors inside of the policy. Next slide, please. Yes, and this is just a graphic representation of what I was talking about. Next slide, please. So before I hand over to Dr. Simulani, you know, we're wanting to say here that it's really important that we emphasize this question of coordination. When we analyzed these particular measures that we have in place, we see here how important food and the provision of food security features in our constitution, and we see the adoption of the food security strategy, but we are wanting to argue that the implementation of these measures is poor. It manifests a top-down set of features, and it has insufficiently involved civil society and civil society organizations. Next slide, please. We'd like to be arguing for shifting the conception of how this policy should be managed towards a multifaceted perspective in which we have tighter intergovernmental cooperation, where we have signed outcome delivery agreements, and we can begin to hold ministers accountable even to each other. A lot of this is evident in the National Development Plan, which was developed in 2012. Next slide, please. And this is the last point that I'm going to be making before I hand over to Dr. Simulani, is that our overarching food and nutrition security institutional arrangements are not sufficient for coordinating the policies that we have. So in 2017, for example, we recommended the establishment of the Intersectoral National Food and Nutrition Security Council. That plan also suggested provincial councils. It also suggested that district sub-councils should be established. And the last point that I want to make before I hand over to Dr. Simulani, Chair, is that this is the plan, but the forums have not been established. And we're looking at, I think, real challenges now in the ways in which, plans come to be realized. Over to you, Dr. Simulani.
Jefferson, before Dr. Simulani, I think maybe one of my colleagues has taken over the sharing of the screen. So the presentation is disappeared now.
Have you sent the presentation to members?
No, somebody has. Yes, I did send it. Okay, it looks like it's back now. Is it visible? I think it's back now.
Yes, it's back.
Okay.
We see the, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Over to you, Dr. Simulani. Sorry, Chair. Sorry. Hello, Chairperson.
Chairperson, you're muted. Chairperson, you're muted.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Is Dr. Smelani on the line, CEO?
Yes, I'm. Can everybody hear me?
Now we can hear you.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. What I was trying to indicate, I initially said the slides that need to be projected, the one that reads coordinated metrics monitoring and evaluation. And having said that, as a prelude, I said what I will be sharing with the committee basically is what I call the areas of improvement. Not necessarily that we will be providing the critics on what the government has done with regards to understanding the dynamics of food insecurity and nutrition in the country. Now, to start with, the most important thing, I think, or the area of improvement is that South Africa does not have an official measures of food and nutrition security or a coherent food and nutrition security information system. This then makes us to have a blind spot with regards to understanding the future impact of the food insecurity in the country. Next slide, please. What are the recommendations then the government needs to consider with this regard is just to translate constitutional commitment to food right into an overarching food and nutrition security law, beginning with the update of the policy on nutritional food and security. And then also to promote nutritional education to manage problems such as obesity, which is the big problem in the country. Invest in data collection tools, actualize long-standing proposals for implementing coordination of food and nutrition security policies, drawing on the example of Suguma Saake in KwaZulu-Natal. Establish national and district forums which brings together complementary expertise in metrics and monitoring and evaluation of food nutrition and nutrition security in the country. Next slide, please. In broadening this understanding, the Human Sciences Research Council conducted a study but based in rural areas in West Coast where it looked at 600 households in Matsikana, Cedarburg and Berg River municipalities in the Western Cape. The key finding was that while majority of households did not report incidences of chronic hunger, but 20% indicated severe hunger and food insecurity in the household level. This prof has also highlighted as what is as emerged in the urban areas in the past. So with this study, recently then we observe the realities or severity of the levels of food insecurity in the urban areas under the COVID-19. So the effect of the COVID-19 national lockdown has negatively impacted the urban poor through reduced income generating activities, which directly compromise their ability to purchase food. But overall, what we have learned under COVID-19 is that the severity of food insecurity in the country is equal both in rural and urban areas, and this required our attention. Next slide, please. So regardless of having adequate food produced in the country, accessibility of food at household level remains inadequate, especially in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. The food access problems were well expressed in the Eastern Cape, where over 45% of households had inadequate or severely inadequate food access. This situation predisposes households in such areas to acute food insecurity and undernutrition during the outbreaks of pandemics of such as COVID-19. Next slide, please. What are then our policy implications? Food security is a fundamental strategic imperative of the South African government, as highlighted in many government documents. The right to have access to sufficient food by all citizens is enshrined in the South African Constitution. To translate the right into action, government approved the National Policy on Food and Nutrition Security, and the National Food Security Plan is currently being developed. Food security in South Africa has to be addressed within the context of issues such as the changing context responding to hazards and shock to economic activities. Next slide, please. In addition, another policy implication is that the outcomes of the food and nutrition security interventions often fall short of policy objectives due to weak or missing coordination mechanisms. Solving these policy coordination failures is not easy. If the nature, extent, and causes of the coordination problems are not accurately identified, proper solutions are likely to be effective and lasting. And another essential part on the diagnosis of, Next slide, please. The intervention measures. It's worth to be noted that South Africa has set up the South Africa Vulnerability Assessment Committee. This committee, which set under the Department of former Department of Agriculture and Fisheries, it exists as a multi-stakeholder forum for coordinating the development and maintenance of a well-coordinated information system for classifying, measuring, monitoring, and forecasting the food insecurity and vulnerability level in the country. The SAVAC has begun the process of conducting baseline assessment to explore the status quo of livelihoods, food and nutrition security in localized geographical areas for informed planning and targeting intervention. The next slide, please. It broadly provides us with what the SAVAC has done so far in terms of identifying 119 livelihood zones on which the food security and nutrition survey is going to be conducted. So in trying to bridge the gap, the next slide, please, which now reads the bridging the knowledge gap, food security and nutrition survey. So in trying to bridge the gaps as far as the food security and nutrition survey is concerned, the department has requested the Human Sciences Research Council to implement the food security survey across the country. And then this study, it marks the first study conducted in the country on food security and nutrition vulnerability. The survey intends to provide the first step towards the development of a multidimensional index to access countries' vulnerability to food insecurity across all four dimensions. It supplements the demographic and health survey by updating the provincial level data that it presented. So the demographic and health survey, approximately 32,000 households annually since 2002, but does not include nutrition indicators focusing on the experience of hunger and access to food only. In our case, we will be surveying 83,059 households with an intention to bring an understanding of the levels of the food, of the level of severity of food insecurity at a household level, and also bring in an element of understanding the nutritious status of people in the household, focusing on the youth and the children. Chair, thank you for that. Let me pass over to my colleague.
Good morning, colleagues. If you could just go back to slides, please, to the slide on how do we measure innovation in the informal. So I'll present some of the findings of a recent baseline study on measuring innovation in the informal sector that we've conducted at the HSRC in 2019. So we have to note that it's work in progress, so we're still busy with the analysis, and this is preliminary results. So in South Africa, there's a considerable economic activity in the informal sector at the local level, where we find significant numbers of individuals and very small enterprises who grow, prepare, and sell food to contribute to food security, and at the same time create livelihoods for millions of South Africans. An economic activity is very localized to specific local geographic spaces, and typically takes place in very small and micro enterprises, often with a single owner. And so in our baseline innovation survey, we conducted, it was conducted in Three Tortoises District in KwaZulu-Natal. It covers a range of economic activities found in that local area. So this presentation, we focus here only on the informal food services firms relative to the total sample. Next slide, please. So the baseline survey maps linkages and knowledge flows across the local production chain, capturing food production, distribution, and consumption, as illustrated in the slide. So it attempts to measure the potential of learning across these forward and backward linkages for capability building. And the survey found that demand and supply is local, which is typical for the informal sector. Next slide, please. So what we found is that innovation activity is very high in this local area and in the informal. 85.6% of informal food services reported that they engage in innovation activities, with 67.2% reporting product innovation, 81.5% process innovation. And so this slide shows the distinctive nature of innovation activities in these informal enterprises. And so the most frequent innovation activities reflect the prevalence of forms of local learning and capability building from customers, suppliers, and other external sources. We found that the local innovation system is weak. The strongest knowledge links were with customers, and so innovation activity tends to be driven by the need to respond to customer demand. And innovation is non-technological. We do not see research and development or formal knowledge and technology-led types of innovation activities. So the policy mechanisms driving these across the innovational, the national system of innovation are not likely to be of value to these informal businesses. Next slide. So for these businesses, which are constantly seeking ways to improve and diversify, most of the barriers to innovation did not have a high effect on the innovations. And the factors that had more effect point to spaces for policy intervention for both so the Department of Science and Innovation and other partners within government and in local government in terms of support to provide basic infrastructure to offset high compliance costs and to create new innovation funding mechanisms. So the next slide, this is the last slide. These are some policy questions based on the research. And at the start of this meeting, the minister emphasized the need to build resilience. And here we're talking about the importance of building resilience in the food system, and informal traders is key to this, particularly in responding to food security for low-income households. And here we just want to highlight the importance of promoting learning and capability building across different types of formal and informal knowledge sources, promoting inclusion by linking local level informal value chains more effectively to formal value chains, and the importance of collaboration and coordination across different government departments at national and provincial and local levels. So that's all for me. Back to you, Craig.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So the last slide essentially brings together the comments that Dr. Peterson has just made. And if they are the issues, Chairperson, of fragmentation and the urgency for developing integrated and articulated policy mechanisms that are rich in information sharing, for trying to turn the situation around. So thank you very much for this opportunity, Chairperson. We're very happy to take questions and comments. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for all the presentations. I have requested members to indicate their intention to engage with the presentations, and thank you, members. We have done so as usual. I'm going to start by recognizing Honorable Detoit.
Thank you, Honorable Cheng. I appreciate the presentations. Honorable Chair, Minister, you've correctly stated that a national state of disaster was declared in February 2020 and signed in March. In November 2019, this committee presented a report to the National Council of Provinces, where the department was instructed to present council with a detailed plan and a report on how the disaster relief will be provided to farmers. We were supposed to have received that that in the first month of 2020. Now, I followed up with the department on numerous occasions in the early months of 2020 to obtain this report, but this was in avail. In the meantime, we were provided with a new budget, and allocations were made according to DORA. And then if we go to the drought relief as such, there are allegations that a large portion of the drought relief funds for fodder was provided, and it was also indicated in the presentation provided to us today that some of those funds were spent on transport now, and not only fodder. Now, I requested a breakdown on this when questions were posed to the minister, but I wasn't supplied with the information, the feedback that I got, that it will be provided to me at a later stage. There are allegations that a large portion of these funds were spent on transport and not necessarily fodder. So the drought relief wasn't provided sufficiently. Also, a large portion of the drought funds allocated to provinces and municipalities were used to drill boreholes in communities where municipalities failed to provide water, that is a basic need, and not drought relief per se to the farmers. Only now, in the urban development grants and MIG grants, funds are availed to drill boreholes. So still we have that shortfall of support to farmers. If you look at the Dr. Kenneth Kaunda District Municipality in the Northwest Province, disaster funds were diverted to fund a Wi-Fi project in the district. We're currently sitting with a situation where the fire brigades are unable to tend to the wildfires that we have in the light of 5 to 8 years of constant drought that we have. So the little grazing that there was is now burning down. So I'm making a plea that we please look to it to provide farmers in the area with fire skids to tend to the wildfires themselves instead of relying on fire stations that are not able to tend to these problems. Minister, and also the drought relief is a very long process to get the funds to where it's actually needed. I mean, money is paid over from national to province, from province to the district, from there to the different municipalities or the agricultural institution. So months go by after the disaster has been declared, after we've been sitting with a problem for a prolonged periods of time, and the funds doesn't get to where it's supposed to go to. And lastly, limited the disaster funds are availed. Mostly a reference is made that relief is for upcoming and subsistence farmers, excluding commercial farmers. We've had this discussion, a heated discussion in this committee in the previous meetings, and this is not supporting cohesion in the agricultural sector, Minister. All farmers are affected by drought, commercial farmers included. So I'm making a plea that, please, we need to support commercial farmers as well, since the disaster on drought was declared in February, and a large portion, or the biggest portion of those funds, were then transferred to fund the COVID disaster that was declared afterwards. We've come to a point where we all understand that food security is of the utmost importance. Yes, we've received some rain, but if you look at the state of the Vaal Dam, it's standing at, I think, 36% at this stage. And with additional boreholes being drilled and municipalities not tending to the sewer systems in the different areas, further pollution will occur, and this will contribute to a catastrophic fiasco in the near. Thank you, Chair. That's all from me. If I will be allowed a second bite, if the time allows, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Dutoit. If time allows, we will have a second round, second bite, based on what has been discussed, because we want members to engage to their satisfaction, because this is your meeting. Honorable Okan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the Honorable Minister that is here today. Honorable Minister, early in January, the Northern Cape, and then late in February, the whole of the country was declared a drought disaster area. Since then, we did not have higher than normal rainfall in the most parts of our country, or definitely in certain areas like the Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Free State, and some other provinces. This had the effect that the severity of the drought in certain areas are even higher now than it was when the drought was declared a disaster in February. Do you agree that there are still areas in South Africa that are still experiencing severe drought? And what are we going to do in order to get them declared as drought disaster areas again? If we look at what happened here and what transpired from this meeting here today, we saw figures that came out that are really disturbing. If you look at slide 12 of the COCTA presentation, it says that there is a budget of 33.6 million in order to evaluate what the disasters are. Of that 33 million, only 260,000 has been spent as at the 31st of July. In other words, we've got 33 million available to us to enable us to find out what the disasters are that we are experiencing or what the problems are that are present throughout the country. But only 260,000 rands of that is spent. A further worrying factor is if you look at the second presentation by Agricultural Rand Reform and you look at the provinces and the amounts of drought relief funding that they got allocated towards them and that they have spent. It is only the Western Cape that spent 12.4 million of their allocated money. None of the other provinces, not even the Northern Cape where I come from, where 35,689,000 rands was made available for fodder provisions. Not one cent of that was spent. And now we ask ourselves, why are the farmers on ground level complaining? And if I say farmers, I mean all farmers. From the smallest upcoming farmer to the richest commercial farmer. All of them are black and white because you get all the races in all of those farming groups. The fact of the matter is that 35 million rand was made available, but none of it was spent for fodder as it should have been spent. That is critical. Then if you come back to slide 23, I think it was, of the COCTA presentation, it says there the disaster management centers, the compliance status. If you look at slide 23 and you look, for an example, to the Northern Cape, most of the answers on compliance there is marked no. You're sitting with a province that are really experiencing one of the biggest droughts in living history, and they don't have the stuff in place. So this brings us to the question, what are we going to do in order to ensure that provinces start to comply with what they are supposed to in order to help relieve the problems that we are experiencing on ground level? It simply just is not enough to see that there is money available, but it's not being spent where it's extremely desperately needed. And secondly, I thank the disaster management centers for the existence of them. But it doesn't help us that they exist, but the provinces aren't making sure that they put in place what they are supposed to. It's devastating to see information like this. So in short, my main question is that I'm of the opinion that there are certain areas in our country that desperately needs to be put back in a disaster management system to be declared disaster areas with regards to the drought. And then we must make sure that especially the province that I come from, the Northern Cape, I have toured through the Northern Cape quite recently and I've visited quite a lot of farms in various areas there. And I can promise you, Honorable Minister, that the situation on ground level is absolutely dire. And if we look at the whole problem with regards to food security, I think it is of utmost importance that we start to assist those farmers that will close down and many jobs will get lost and many more people will go hungry due to that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Honorable Okam. The next speaker on the line will be Honorable Ryder, Dennis Ryder. You are the next.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You'll note I'm wearing matching ties with Eunice today. Chair, yes, thank you. Minister, thank you for attending the meeting and for your content. I must admit that I'm quite disappointed by the contents of the first two presentations. And here's the reason why. we are after all the Select Committee on Appropriations. So I think when we ask people to come and present to us, what we're looking for is some information that's going to help us making our decisions going forward. So while some reflection on how funds have been used in the past is always necessary and valuable, I think that we would have benefited greatly today from a presentation to say what is needed, what are ideas, what are things going forward. And I think, Dr. Tao, you missed an opportunity, a good opportunity, to show what areas require focus going forward. And particularly as well, Mr. Khakhatse, Program 3, while you were giving your presentation, I had a quick look at the Agricultural Department of Agriculture and Rural Development and Land Reform budget. Program 3 is food security. Program 6 is fisheries. And we didn't get a sense of what's being done, what's needed to be done, and that's left me kind of a little disappointed in the content today and not knowing really what to do with the information I've derived from those two presentations. I think Prof. Sudian and Dr. Simulani, Dr. Peterson, your presentation had the most value for me because you pulled this issue together, saying exactly what the big problem is, that there's no coordination, there's too many players. So here's the thing, COGTA and agriculture, what you should be telling us, what some of us already know because we've seen it, is that food security is about to become one of the primary issues on the front of mind of people in South Africa. The point has been made, unemployment is about to spike, increase by possibly up to 50%. Those graphs about food vulnerability are about to spike as well. It was interesting, the 10 last years were quite evident in those graphs. But believe me, we're going to have a spike again now in a post-COVID environment. So what are we doing to fix it? So we've got some real issues around food security that need addressing. The drought has already been spoken about. But we've got things like a dependence on the Defence Force to monitor things like controlling the borders. So our maritime borders. One of the issues that we have is that the Navy has got 84 days of the year when they can do marine patrols. That 84 days out of 365 days when they can actually patrol our borders and make sure that our fishing reserves are protected and safe. Now, there's lots of evidence that indicates that other countries have boats in international waters or ships in international waters just on our borders, and then at night, under the cover of darkness, they come into South African water and plunder our fish reserves. So what are we able to do with that? There was no comment about the need for perhaps reevaluating the Defense Department and the way they spend their budget. In terms of border security, the Army has said to us that they need at least 22 companies to be deployed to protect our borders. Unfortunately, they only have the financial resources to deploy 15. That's 15 out of 22 companies for border security. And just go and ask any farmer on the KZN side or the Free State side of the border with Lesotho about stock theft, and they'll tell you that's their number one concern. So what are we doing about the Defence Force's budget and the way the Defence Force is spending their money, where they already have an unfunded organigram, but they can't actually fulfill their constitutional mandate and the requirements of other departments for them? So the coordination is important. What are we doing about the laws around fire protection associations and the penalties and consequences of people who light fires and cause fires to go across, particularly small-scale farms? These people are not protected. The FPA rules are not strong enough to actually cause any consequences for anyone. So that's another issue that needs attention. Farm murders. So we've seen the number of farmers reducing dramatically in the country. It's a hot topic at the moment. South African police services, saying they don't have the manpower to deal adequately with it, and they certainly don't have the intelligence capacity to deal with it in terms of the information that they're able to procure. The other issue is that we have land grabs happening all over the place, and this is one of the biggest concerns with government by the KwaZulu-Natal Farmers Association, where they say that they are so petrified of planting anything because what they're seeing is that their land is being grabbed left, right, and center. So what I'm saying is I really see a missed opportunity here. Perhaps there's not a lot of money to throw around, and this is the point that's going to get, I'm fairly sure of it. We know that there's a finite pot in terms of resources. But now let's talk about monitoring of the borders. The governing party is quick to talk about the fourth industrial revolution, and yet we've got boots on the ground. These are great, insufficient boots. But if we had intelligent surveillance mechanisms, and they are certainly available, if we could only just budget for those, reduce the manpower in the Defence Force, take a look at working smarter, making sure that we've got the intelligence in terms of the information that we're gathering using surveillance footage to enable us to have strategic and targeted responses to border incursions. That's going to go a long way. It's going to reduce our costs. So it's going to be a short-term capital outlay for a long-term operational expenditure gain. So and then I think Dr. Peterson had made the point. The high compliance cost with so many innovations is problematic, particularly for farmers. Again, the fact that there's no drone legislation, we've been very slow to introduce any legislation around drones. And looking at how farmers are using drones internationally to monitor their crops, to monitor their livestock, and look into issues of farming management, agricultural management, using fourth industrial technology, using third industrial technology as well, which we haven't caught up with yet as a country. So that's what I would have preferred to see. I think, as I say, the last presentation was perhaps the one that gave me the most food for thought, and I appreciated that one certainly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ryder. Thokozani, PS, on the line. And other members, please mute your mics because there's a background sound that is disturbing to hear exactly what members are saying. The next person or the next member to speak is Honorable Muletsane.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the presentation of COGSTAR, slide 17, when I checked there, I didn't see Free State and Gauteng province. So does that mean that they don't have an allocation for drought relief? If yes, how do they deal with the challenges of drought? Thank you.
Thank you. Very precise, as usual. Honorable Karim, you are the next on the line.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, in a very over-condensed way, I just want to make a few points. I think most of us will agree that COGSTAR, the National Disaster Management Center, and other organizations before us and others who are not here, who deal with food and nutrition security, climate change, disaster management, all these are interrelated, of course, are in a very unenviable position. I mean, partly because, if I'm correct, we have less than half the average rainfall globally of countries. I mean, also, there's a global effort needed to deal with climate change, and we're not getting that ever more now in the last few years. Things are so unpredictable, perhaps more than ever before. I mean, I don't know enough. There's, scientists here, and Dr. Kosazana Dlamini Zuma herself is a doctor. They'll know more. But from what I read, many scientists are saying that this is not disease X, as the leader of the vaccine trial process at Oxford University speaks of. And, you know, there are others in our own country, our very good scientists, also saying that, look, this is not the worst in terms of pandemics. It's only a forerunner of what's likely to come. And that professor at Oxford spoke of disease X, and she said, this isn't it, actually. So if the scientists are right about that, what's in store for all of us, especially vulnerable countries like ours and countries of the South, moreover, generally, is huge. It's going to be very difficult to know how to manage. So obviously also all these things happening, not least the COVID pandemic, means there's very limited money available. But there are some things, obviously, as an appropriations committee, together with our partner committee in the National Assembly, the Standing Committee on Appropriations, we need to apply our mind more to, because, Comrade Chair, I think all of us know budgets are ultimately an outcome of trade-offs and the like. But I'm not sure how much, you know, the issues we're dealing with can be a trade-off. So I think we have already done some work in this regard. I think we need to call a joint meeting with the Standing Committee on Appropriations and decide what to do, because otherwise this becomes a talk shop. And as Parliament, we always criticize the executive for not doing enough. What about ourselves? We have the power. Obviously, the minister, the DG, and the departments concerned will do all they can in preparation, and they're doing it presumably right now, for the MTBPS. But as committees in Parliament, nothing stops us, as far as I know, of the two committees writing to the Minister of Finance and saying, look, we've had this briefing. These are the things we think should happen. We should ask our researchers to assist us. They're more technically competent than many of us on where these trade-offs, if you want to use that term, should be done to assist the sector. Professor Craig Saldin, may I also, Chairperson, your permission, say hello to him, because I know him in his other capacities, his previous roles, and wish him and his team well. I mentioned that, if I got this correct, that South Africa is regarded as a food secure country. Now surely, and maybe he wants to respond to this, and the minister might want to if she cares to, that surely we can't also look at all these issues without addressing the nature and structure of our economy, the horrendous inequalities. So when we offer all sorts of solutions, why don't we raise the crucial issue? What percentage of the income of this country, for example, or the percentage of the land is owned by who? We can't run away from that. We are politicians. Then I just want to say that, you know, it's been mentioned that the debate on this got polarized. That was not necessary. As far as I'm concerned, the majority party's attitude, unless I've got it wrong in that meeting, Chairperson, and you can guide the meeting if you need to, said that, look, we shouldn't polarize this issue. Food and nutrition security affects all of us, from the richest person to the poorest person in this country. And what we were simply saying was that if it is the case that emerging farmers, as is likely, are most disproportionately affected by COVID-19, they certainly were before COVID-19, then they presumably, in fairness, should be provided with proportionately more of the allocation of funds and other resources. But nowhere did we suggest in the ANC Congress chair that, you know, therefore, because one of your major concerns is not letting African or emerging farmers get to be where they are, you know, collapsing, that it's reasonable to allocate the necessary funds to them. But you can't preclude established farmers, because the food that they serve to secure serves people of all colors and all classes. So, I mean, really, it was never meant to be polarized. What we are simply saying was it's correct to do what some of the members were claiming is being done. But perhaps the minister should answer this question, because it keeps coming up, Comrade Minister, and it will come up again and again. So perhaps I should put the question starkly to you. Is it your department's policy or the government's policy or the Department of Land and Agriculture's policy to preclude white farmers from getting any support because of COVID-19. Perhaps we just put the question to you starkly, because that's what that issue ultimately, Comrade Chair. So let the minister answer. The only other issue I wanted to raise was you know, Minister, we keep getting this complaint. Civil society and their representatives and technical experts come to Parliament repeatedly, as I'm sure you're acutely aware, and say, we have a role to play. Government can't do it on its own. The state is not strong enough. You know, ministers always say, and government doesn't, and so we've got to work with civil society. And they come here and complain they're not being involved. So a question to you. The work done by the HSRC, does your department give considered attention to it? How do you work with the Human Science Research Council, if at all? And what do you say in response to the HSRC's comment that civil, it's a top-down approach that we have towards which actually may be partly true, but I find it hard to believe because I once played a role around this. And as far as I know at that time, we were very clear, you know, and I also played another role where we passed the disaster management bill at the time, where that was embedded in policies, as I know. And we got excellent inputs, perhaps understandably, because we politicians are technical experts. But I remember, Comrade Minister, we got excellent inputs from all sorts of experts who came. We had big public hearings on this matter, and we were very struck by the quality of the technical inputs we got, and also the inputs by some civil society organizations, which really helped to enhance the bill. In fact, we had a big stake, Comrade Minister, on the shaping of that bill, as I recall it. That would have been, you know, when was it, early 2000s. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Karim. Honorable Mkiva, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join the colleagues in welcoming the presentations and thank the Minister as well for coming in person in this committee so that he can engage with us directly. I'm partly covered in a number of areas. I just want to perhaps raise two issues. One is the issue of the food security. I come from rural areas of the country, and many of our fields are lying fallow. And I want to check particularly with the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs, is it not possible to come up with some kind of a progressive propaganda machinery which can sort of motivate our people to go back and tilt the land and ensure that we give them the necessary support in so far as ensuring that we fix all the boreholes that are not working and also rejuvenate the irrigation schemes that are there with all the equipment and the machinery that is also lying in the fields out there. Over and above that, we can also support them with the right seeds and recommend crops that can help us to have a sustained food production, both in rural areas as well as some urban areas with land parcels that are available for cultivation and planting. The other area which I think is critical, which I think we need to consider investing in it, is this issue of making use of our large and long seaboard and start a process of coming up with desalination of water, because it's clear that we're going to have the challenge of water going forward with all the changing climatic conditions, which also affect us as a country. So is it not possible that we start looking at this before it becomes too expensive? You know, I traveled quite a number of times to Libya, and I was quite inspired by their main made river, which the late Colonel Gaddafi invested in about almost 20 years ago, and it works like charm for a country which is like 70% a desert, but it has huge access of water simply because they exploited the water from the Mediterranean Sea and created a river out of that. We have the longest seaboard in Southern Africa. And I think the sooner we start investing on that desalination man-made river, the better, because we are struggling with water. And I think even underground water, the manner in which we are investing with the piecemeal fashion of the boreholes, that water will run dry. In the medium term. So I think the best is the great amount of water that is available in the ocean. And I think the sooner we start exploiting that, the better, and it will be cheaper for us. So thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mkiva. I see Honorable Njatu has just joined us, but I think he missed the presentations. Before I hand over to the minister and the teams to respond and empower us on this issue, Minister, you might have and other colleagues, you might have had something or realized something when members were talking. This has been one of the topics that nearly divided us, or that nearly made us to take a wrong direction, where we nearly spoke on party politics. But because you mandated me as the organization to lead this as a woman, I don't know, maybe it's because as a woman they can listen more, because you can see, we have males comrades here and colleagues who are participating here. But this is a very serious issue that nearly divided us, and we have had serious engagement until we found each other and said, together we have to resolve this thing. We don't have to politicize it. We don't have to racialize it. It has got nothing to do with what we are trying to do. It affects everybody as a South African, as a voter, as a citizen of South Africa. So this male honorable members of mine are always trying to make sure that we work as a team. I don't know if I will hand over to you, Minister, first, but protocol says you speak last. But it depends on you, Minister, what you are comfortable with.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to all the members. Ordinarily, I would speak last, but as I had indicated that I need to leave, I will speak first, because I've stayed more than I was supposed to. And I will leave the other colleagues to answer the specific questions. But I just want to make a general point to start with, that indeed this country tends to be classified as a country that is food secure. But I think what they mean is that there is enough food grown in this country. And indeed there is. And food even gets exported out of this country. But what they don't look at is who has access to the food. And that's when then you will see that the country may be too secure.
Sorry. Can someone whose mic is on please mute? And can I also request, Minister, that we have the privilege of seeing you on
video? Oh, okay. Sorry. There am I. You can see me. Can you see me now? Can you see me?
Yes, we can, Minister. Thank you.
Okay. I was just saying that, yes, the country is recognized as food secure. There is enough food in this country. It can feed all of us. It even gets exported. But the access to the food is, and the fact that people can't afford it, it's not accessible to all. That's why, and it's a country of paradoxes, I would call it. it's a paradox of food security in the country, but food insecure citizens, a lot of them. It's the same as it's got poor people, but it's a rich country. So that's the paradox that all of us must find a way of solving. A rich country with a lot of poor people. So that's what I just wanted to say. And to say that in terms of whether we work with HSRC, whether we're top down, I think Dr. Dawu will talk about the structures that are there, which include people on the ground, but also in the assessment of drought and in the district, it's a consultative and an inclusive process. There's no one who is deliberately excluded from accessing. But as I say, Dr. Dawu will speak to that. I think it's important. I heard that somebody said the ruling party speaks about the industrial revolution and the defense force and the police, and I think those things, yes, are dependent things, but we can answer for the budget of the defense force. We can answer for the budget of the police, but they are dependencies that we, I'm sure agriculture might speak to even more. But we can't work smarter, and the honorable member says they have to work smarter. All of us have to work smarter. But for us to work smarter, we must indeed be involved in the fourth industrial revolution. And even that, we have seen during this pandemic that there is a big digital divide in this country. And it determines whether you can get your schooling or not. It determines whether you can, in the rural areas, have proper communication, you can have Wi-Fi, you can sell your products, you can... So the digital divide is huge and it has to be resolved. And of course, working smarter would have to be part of that. And then, as I say, I'm not going to answer on the issues of the defense force and the police and all that. What I would agree with the members on is that indeed I, even myself, find it frustrating the long process of assessments and submission of plans before the funds are actually dispensed. I think it's something I've raised with the department, but it's also not dependent on the department alone, because the department works with other departments depending on what type of drought it is. But I think there I would agree that process is too long. We need to find ways of shortening it. But I would also not be able to account for the money once it's gone to the provinces, because it is the provinces that would have given plans and the money would have been dispersed to them. Why they don't use it, I think it's something I wasn't even aware that they haven't used the money, because as you know, the transactions go to Treasury more than to us. So I wasn't aware that the money has not been used in the Northern Cape. because it was one of those drugs where there was lots of pressure to release the money, and the money was released. So I think it's important. I will also just call the Premier later and check what's going on. But because there is a legislature and there are councils, I think some of these questions would be answered quicker if they are asked there. Because part of the reason one of the members said, I said I'll give the information later. Of course, when I'm asked how was the money used or how much has been used or whatever that is provincial or municipal, we have three spheres of government that are interdependent and interrelated but distinctive. So if I'm asked about something in the municipality, I don't have it in my fingertips, whether it's a tender or what. I will have to source that information from that sphere. So if members want a quick answer, it's better to source it from the sphere itself, rather than try and source it from me and then complain when I say I'll have to find the information. Because if it's a provincial matter, if you source it from the legislature, then you get it quicker. If it's a local government issue and you source it from the local government, then you get the information much faster. So I would agree with the long processes, that maybe working together, we must find ways of shortening them. Whether the money that we gave for the draft was used for transport and not fodder, that I can't answer, because the money would have been given to the province to use, and the province would have then decided together with the districts and the farmers what they need the money for. So I can't answer that question. If it was supposed to be for fodder and it was used for transport, then it's a problem. But the people who used it for transport are the people who must answer the question. And of course, I think we agree that we need to look at what needs to be done. One, to create more resilience. But as Honorable Karim said, if we don't change the structure of the economy, these things we can talk about ad nauseam, but they will not be solved. Because if people don't have land to grow food on or to do businesses, then it doesn't matter how much we talk, there will still be food insecure. So I think we must open up and talk about everything that is a problem in this country. Even if they do grow something, if they don't have access to markets because they don't belong to the boards and all that, it's a problem. So indeed, we must look at the structure of the economy. Yes, land grabs are illegal, but there is land hunger in this country. It's not right to grab land, but it's actually unconstitutional that we continue having this land hunger in the country. So let's talk about everything that will build resilience in the country, that will build food security. In terms of whether we do boreholes or we do desalination, yes, I don't think they are mutually exclusive, but initially desalination was quite expensive, but also it's something that can be done in the long term, because if you are going to desalinate on the Indian Ocean or Atlantic and bring the water to the Midlands. It's a huge program that is not a short-term program. It may not even be a medium, it may be a long-term, which is necessary. But in the short-term, people need water now. We can't then say, because people need water now, they must wait until we have desalinated, we have put a huge desalination plant. I agree we should do that, but I'm just saying it can't be done now immediately and produce water immediately for the people. The boreholes are useful in that they do produce water in the short term, and people do have access to water in the short term. In the long term, yes, I know the man-made river in Libya, it assisted them a lot. So let's agree that desalination should be looked at in the long term. But now we can't say boreholes can't be built because we have to desalinate. So maybe those are the few remarks I wanted to. There was also a question about places that still have the disaster. Mm-hmm. I think both Mdu and Dao will look at that, will answer that question. So let me leave it at that. And I'm sorry that I have to leave. But maybe in future there must be some working together on the timings of these select committees. Because we are made to choose between a cabinet committee that you belong to and the select committee that you belong to. So it's just a suggestion that maybe before the time is allocated for a select committee, there should be some discussion between us as honorable members so that we are able to attend fully, but also not neglect our other responsibilities. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, may I just come in before the minister leaves? Because this is an issue, minister. People seem to think, or at least that's how it comes across to some of us, that there's some explicit policy in government to exclude farmers on the basis of race from any support. Is there such a policy?
There is no such a policy. And the money that was given for the drought had no color on it. It was for the people who needed the money for the drought, whether they are white, black. There's no policy that excludes. So if maybe honorable members can show us where it's happening and we can deal with it, but there is no such policy. I can say it without fear of contradiction. Thank you.
And presumably no such practice, okay, because people will then come back when you're gone and say, yes, that's the policy, but in practice it happens. Because you can produce statistics, I'm sure. In fact, it's astonishing. I know you have to go. Final point. Yesterday, the Small Business Development Minister appeared before us, and she showed who are the beneficiaries of the loan, 200 billion rand loan agreement. And it's covered in the media, and I'm sure you know the answers anyway. But thank you, Minister.
Yes, it's just that sometimes those who have want more. Sometimes it happens. I think Dr. Dawood also answered to that. But I can tell you there is no such. And if there is a province or a district that says there is such a policy, please let us know. and we would deal with it. But it's not the policy at all. And I haven't had any written complaints or anything about that there is a district that has that policy or a province that has that policy. But it's clear that when you, generally, when you ask for plans and for people to apply, those who have access to many things will be the ones that will benefit, because they can do things quickly online, they can do this, they can do that. So the divide is still there, even when you're looking at who should, when you're looking at relief. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. And I think you are not surprised by my Zulu on the stoop here, my comrade Karim, has caused the dialogue between you and her and him. He just jumped in, and this is how he makes this committee of ours lively. We enjoy his character sometimes. But we want to really, on behalf of the committee, appreciate, and I know that members will not get 100% satisfaction of the with the answers that you have given. And from what I've heard, Honorable Minister, you have an open door policy, and it's not about you, it's about the policy of this government and the governing party, not the same party. That if there are things, we don't have to wait for committee meetings to raise them. We can all the time write questions, inquire from the department in as far as issues that we are not happy about them, or things that we have identified that we are not happy with them. So we really appreciate your commitment, and also want to agree with you that we will, amongst ourselves, because we have one committee. This committee is a committee that deals with, setting in select committee on appropriation and also on finance. We have days who will administrative issues. We will deal with them and consider that we don't at the same time call you to the house and say you are failing to implement on what we have recommended or resolved on. We will consider that, and we appreciate your time, your compromise, and thank you very much. Stay safe, and you have sent a message. The mask on, that we should not forget that because we are on level 2, there's no more mask. Thank you so much, Honorable Minister, and have a blessed day.
Thank you very much. No one is safe until we are all safe. So we must protect Allah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Can I, who's coming next on the list to answer, to give responses on issues that have been raised? Dr. Wu?
Dr. Chow, and there is Mtu as well from agriculture.
Okay. Before Mtu, Dr., come in, please.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and my sincere appreciation to the members also for raising the questions, and to the Minister for addressing these issues very profoundly. Honorable Chair, I will just really touch on the regulatory aspects of the questions, as I believe that my colleagues from agriculture will comprehensively deal with the sector-specific issues. as it falls within their mandate, and they've already outlined some of the key issues. So just kicking off with the question by Honorable Dudoit, I will make reference to the two, the farm that the one that talks about the process taking long. Our minister has already indicated that this matter requires effective intergovernmental coordination. As you acknowledge that disaster management is an intergovernmental function, implying that the bottom-up, value chain arrangement of dealing with any disaster occurrence must be as agile as possible so that decisions at high level can also be easy. I'm saying this because when you go to Section 56 of the Disaster Management Act, you will find that there are clearly prescribed measures that have to be considered before any decision can be made on allocating disaster funds. And these are also sufficiently outlined in Section 57. So 56 should be read with 57. And if I could just read that, and this is what really binds us as officials and our political leaders. Firstly, before we can agree to releasing any money, the first question is whether any prevention or mitigation measures were taken or initiated by the municipality or province, and if not, the reasons for the absence of such measures. And it goes on to say whether the disaster could have been avoided or minimized had prevention and mitigation measures been taken. We can go through those sections, so let me not dwell much on those, but it is very much important when we talk about the agility of our response that we look at it in the context of what the legislator expected in putting together this piece of legislation. Therefore, honorable members, this necessitates that we prioritize the asking of questions as to whether there are any mitigation measures in terms of disaster management plans by sector departments, by provinces, by municipalities, including by the farmers themselves. That is why our colleague Dr. Khakazi mentioned the fact that when farmers realize that the land is dry, there's no rain, there's no grass, they might have to consider complying with the Conservation of Agriculture Resources Act by reducing livestock so that they don't find themselves in a drought situation. And the minister has clearly indicated that we are in a water-scarce country and we have areas that are perennially dry due to the fact that they are a karoo. And we know that the karoo means hot, dry, and arid areas of our country. So it means the farming practices will have to be different in those areas so that we are able to meet food security, but also adapt to climate change, which is a reality that we're facing. So our process is determined by compliance issues, honorable members. The issue of excluding other farmers, that has been covered. Our colleagues will elaborate on that, but what we know is that the process is bottom up and there's thorough consultations and there's assessment of risk based on the prevailing conditions on the ground. My colleagues will talk about the early warning committees that continue monitoring and the monthly advisory notices that they issue in various, at national level, also in the provinces, about the drought risk so that people can act quickly. Then Honorable Member Okam raised the issue about terminating the national state, allowing the national state of disaster to lapse while other areas are still faced by drought conditions. I think the answer is already provided for in the my latter statement to say, while there's been significant rainfall in certain areas, there are areas that indeed still have pockets of drought and water scarcity conditions. But the question is, whether the solution is to keep a state of disaster perpetually in place in order to deal with those areas. The answer is in the Act, no. And the Act says no. You will have to develop adaptation measures. But where the adaptation measures are overstretched, then you put in place a state of disaster. So there can still be an assessment to determine whether there's a need to declare for those areas. But that assessment should also be informed by Section 57 of the Disaster Management Act, whether there are plans to mitigate risk in those particular areas. And then the other issue was on Honorable Member Mletswane regarding slide 17, why Free State and Gauteng are excluded. The reason is that there were no submissions from those two provinces, and we made follow-ups. In particular, Gauteng indicated that they were facing moderate. They were not facing severe drought conditions, and they could be in a position to implement measures within their budgets to deal with it. And that's really what we appreciate, that whenever you realize that the measures that you want to activate can cope with the situation, don't just go for disaster funding, because in any case, the disaster funding is very minuscule, as you have seen the amount that we have spoken about. Free State is the same situation, but we are also aware that Department of Water and Sanitation has also reprioritized funding to deal with drought, particularly hydrological drought in that province. I also want to embrace the point raised by Honorable Member Karim regarding the joint conversation of SILECT and Standing Committee. I want to just share that the Portfolio Committee of COCTA has already also initiated a joint portfolio committee colloquium on disaster management. And this is because of the realization that dealing with disaster issues is not just about the coordination role that COCTA plays, but it's about the mainstreaming role that that has to be played by various sectors. So that colloquium will therefore help the portfolio committee, other portfolio committees, to look at how disaster risk management is mainstreamed in water and sanitation, how it is mainstreamed in human settlement issues, because if you build in certain areas, you must also check whether there will be water, whether you use water conservation methods for washing and so on and so forth. So they were going to bring on board different portfolio committees. If I recall, there were about 12. Unfortunately, the session couldn't take place, but I learned that that is still being considered with the chair of chairs. So that is a very appreciated arrangement. We will really wish to support it as much as we can. The last point from my side, Honorable Chair and members, is about the inclusion of civil society. Indeed, our ministers already indicated that we work so well with various role players. Section 5 of the Disaster Management Act require that we have a National Disaster Management Advisory Forum. This has been in place since the promulgation of the Act. If I recall well, from 2003, when it was the Advisory Forum has been formalized, it meets on quarterly basis. Human Science Research Council is represented fully by, if I recall well, by Dr. Lunga, Wilfred Lunga. There we receive very valuable input, including other role players. Just last week, our DG had a meeting with the resident representative of the UNDP, and we have extended an invitation to them, to UNDP, to serve in the advisory forum. We keep on bringing various role players, government and non-governmental entities, to make sure that they have a fair and sufficient contribution into the discourses of disaster management. I will end there, Honorable Chair and members. If there are other areas to address, we can do that under the guidance of our Minister and the DG. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. That will happen under the guidance of the chairperson of the meeting. I just hope that we had the luxury of time. so that we can have enough time to engage on these matters and give members an opportunity to make follow-ups on issues that they are not happy with. But unfortunately, we don't have the luxury of time. Only 3 hours was allocated for this meeting. I'm going to request someone from agriculture to respond on issues that have been raised by members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will not be long unless there is specific follow-up questions.
Sorry, can you switch on your camera, please?
Thank you very much, Chair. Most of the questions related to drought have been responded to by the Minister and Dr. Tau. Similarly, the question regarding access by all South African farmers to drought relief funds have been responded to by the Minister. There was a question about the working relationship between government and civil society organizations. I must say that there is a very, very strong working relationship between the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development and civil society generally. We have a multi-stakeholder platform where we discuss a number of policy areas. We've had in the recent past, we have had 2 policy dialogues which were attended by our minister and our deputy ministers. We continue to have further policy dialogues, jointly facilitated by our department and civil society. We are also having joint projects that we are working on together, specifically around the implementation of the settlement of claims for labor tenants, but also on the monitoring of the COVID disaster 19 food security intervention that was launched by the minister sometime in April. We have assisted quite a number of smallholder farmers and communal farmers, approximately about 15,000 of them. In the last 4 months or so, we've allocated in excess of about 600 million to support the smallholder farmers, precisely because of the challenges that have been raised, namely the issue of the country being seen as food secure, but at a household level, we see very high levels of food insecurity. Currently, we are in very serious discussions with the National Treasury and the Presidency with regard to an additional allocation of what is called the Presidential Employment Stimulus, which will target, again, subsistence farmers who are likely affected by the COVID-19, but also generally the households that are affected by food prices that have escalated in the recent past. The Presidential Employment Stimulus, there's an amount of about R1 billion that has been set aside for supporting subsistence farmers across the country, both in urban and rural areas. Again, we are going to be working with civil society. We're working with our provincial sister departments of agriculture in this particular space. We are just awaiting the approval process. At a technical level, we've done all that we needed to do as departments. The work is currently being processed at National Treasury. It will go through the normal budget process to mean combat and ultimately will get a final decision on the allocation of those funds. We are also working with the Solidarity Fund that has set aside an amount of 70 million rand for, again, subsistence farmers with a particular focus in communal areas to provide them with the input vouchers for the farmers that Honorable Mkiva was talking about, where the fields in the villages are lying fallow. We are going to be working with the National House of Traditional Leaders, the National House and the District Houses, together with the departments of COCTA at a national and the provincial level to coordinate and roll out the implementation in this regard. At the level of the department, together with the agriculture, together with the Agricultural Research Council, we are looking at the mitigation strategies. I think both Dr. Tau and the minister emphasized the need that more than anything, we need to have strategies to mitigate against the risk of disasters. We know that climate change is here. We know that disasters are going to be with us. So we are looking at working together in finalizing, in developing disaster mitigating strategies for the country. We are also extending that work with the Department of Science and Innovation, where we are looking at collaborating. The CEO of HSRC has already mentioned the work, the study that we are jointly cooperating on with regard to food security, which will go a long way in addressing the policy gaps that they identified in the presentation that they made this morning. We are sorry that our presentation may not have met the expectations of some of the honorable members. We did not come with a whole lot of information. We limited our presentation to what was required of the department in terms of the letter that we received from the secretariat of the committee. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Agriculture. Is there anyone from Agriculture who wants to make additions, or you're done for Agriculture so that we can go to the next presentation?
Madam Chair, can just quickly check with DDG Ramasodi if I omitted anything.
Okay. Please do so. CEO, in the meantime, please be ready for the responses. I don't know how would you handle it, but I think you'll be the first one, then you'll give direction. Before you, CEO, we are done with Agriculture.
Okay, I just wanted to check our colleague, DDG Ramasodi.
Okay, let's give the CEO and mute your mic in the meantime. CEO?
So there were no questions for us, Chair, but we're happy to answer and even to take further issues that you would like us to be assisting with, Chair.
Okay. As members were making comments, I thought maybe there's something that you want to comment on, whether it's directly to you or indirectly to you. Like I said in the beginning when I opened the meeting, that these issues for the three of you, they interlink. Honorable Karim, something? I see your mic is on.
No, I did ask Craig a direct question, which was, he said, I think, that, you know, and the minister also added to that, that South Africa is a food secure country. So the question put to him was, is this not because, well, it's defined as food secure, but the fact is there's so much of hunger because of the economic and broader social structure of South Africa, which means that certain people have access to the food and others don't, and that, you know, we can't address these issues without also addressing the social inequalities in our society. Thank you. But he doesn't have to answer it. It's just, you know, if he wants to, yes.
Okay.
You can comment on that, CEO.
Thanks very much, Chair. So what Honourable Member Karim is talking about is really the technical definition which is used by the Food Organization of the United Nations, and in terms of that definition, it's a straight technical calculation which is made about the quantity of food that is produced in a country in relation to the population, and it's simply that equation which results in this calculation, which Minister Nkosazana Zuma repeated, that technically we are food secure. But of course, the analysis which Honourable Member Karim makes is absolutely pertinent here. The distribution of that food is the issue, there's a lot to talk about the economic structures in the country which underlie how that food is made available and is distributed, you know, amongst the population, is of course this big question which all of us are always going to be, you know, very concerned about. By the way, it's not just a South African issue, it's a global issue. It does need to be understood in that kind of global context. But the point that we wanted to make earlier, Chairperson, about coordination, I just would like to repeat here now. And it's come up also in the way in which this conversation to COCTA and to DAF, you know, these comments that have been made. We can easily do better. And we would need to be finding ways in which to be thinking about how this question of joining up can be improved. And the critical issue for us here is how information is managed between government departments and in processes of decision making. And we could easily be landing ourselves in an improved situation by paying attention to this policy framework that we have, and ensuring that the policy framework is even as we have it at the moment is implemented better. So it's a question, Chairperson, of governance, and it's a question of information. You know, before we even begin to think about these deep structural challenges which we are confronted with, we can do better with what we have as things are at the moment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CEO. Agriculture, I think you're done, Ntu. You have verified with your colleagues. They're fine.
Chair, sorry, I just omitted to mention a very, very important matter. That is the development of the agriculture and agro-processing master plan. The department is working quite closely again with the social partners in agribusiness, with commercial banks, organized agriculture as in farmers associations and community organizations and civil society in the development of the agriculture and agro-processing master plan that seeks to address exactly the challenges of food security, among others, where we are looking at, we have identified the land in the former homelands that Honorable Mkiva was referring to. We are looking at the 8 million hectares of land reform farms that we've acquired over the last 25 years, which are currently lying fallow, unproductive. We are looking at fixing the support systems that go with that, be it the dipping tanks, feedlot facilities, But we're also looking at localizing production in the areas in which people live. We are looking at also building production and processing facilities in the areas where there is greatest potential, in close proximity to communities, in villages, in close proximity to where people live, so that we do not see the movement of food from major centers such as Gauteng and other areas into the areas where there are high concentration, where there's high concentration of poverty. Chairperson, we will be pleased to get an opportunity at a time convenient to the committee to come and present this plan. On Friday, we are presenting it to the Interministerial Committee on Land and Agriculture that is chaired by the Deputy President. We are hoping that after processing it through the IMC, we'll be going to the Cabinet Committee and ultimately to Cabinet to get a go-ahead in terms of whether we are on the right track, but it is a social compact with all social partners where it is not only government that is going to be investing in the implementation of this plan, but we are bringing all sectors of society that are involved in the space in agriculture. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mukiva, there's something that he wants to follow up on. He indicated that there's a question that he raised and it was not answered. He feels it was not fully answered. Mukiva?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the learning. My name is Mishanga. God again, Zai Bambi. The finance, just to first say that I really appreciate this articulation by Comrade Mdu. I think that's quite very revolutionary and very robust and what we've been expecting. I can't wait for it to be implemented. That for the first time, there will be that kind of serious engagement looking at things that we've been raising over years. We welcome this, and I want to add on to say that in their workings with the National House of Traditional Leadership, they must make sure that they also bring on board the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa, because the Contralefa is on the ground all the time on these matters. So I will make it a point, actually, that I interact with the office of the DG to ensure that that actually happens, to ensure that the rollout and the implementation doesn't have hiccups or obstacles. Number two, I had asked a question about desalination, and I know that desalination is a water affairs issue, but I think that with coordination with the Department of Agriculture, because agriculture has a massive usage of water in the country, and therefore it should have an interest. I would love to know whether there are plans or that particular initiative is going to be initiated on the side of the line function department. So I would like to get just a view from the DG or a member of his team. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkiva. And I did it knowing that other members will also want to make follow-ups. And I did say that when time allows us, I will want us to have enough time, to have enough engagement on the subjects that we have raised. And on my list now, I have two people who want to, actually, is Honorable Tutet wants to make a follow-up, and Honorable Ryder want to make a comment. And I'm requesting that the honorable members, I have 8 minutes to go and share another meeting. Thank you. Honorable Tutoit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. With regards to the policy that the Honorable Karim mentioned, it's not about policy. It is about the resolutions and the way in which it's worded. If you include upcoming farmers and subsistence farmers and not other farmers, by default, they are then excluded in that specific resolution. It's a great concern that the Minister and the Department of Agriculture allude that once these funds are paid out, they do not follow up and see that the funds are actually used for what it's intended to be used for. I understand that there are different spheres of government, but it allows for underspending, corruption, and spending on the wrong project if the department doesn't follow up on this. And furthermore, Mr. Shabana was he mentioned that farmers must see to it that they reduce their herds because of the drought. They already do, sir. But the per capita sheep to hectare farming in KwaZulu-Natal compared to the Karoo is not the same. Farmers cannot reduce their herds any further. It takes years to build up a stud and once your core and your core breeding herd. The drought support is needed for the survival of these farm units, and it's not needed for enrichment, sir. If I'm allowed, I'm willing to share documentation and video material on what it currently looks like on some of these farms where animals die next to dry water troughs. It looks like a desert, and it's not because people go to farm where they're not supposed to farm. They've been farming there for years on end. It's just the drought is here, it's now, it's real, and our farmers need the support from government in the shape of fodder, as well as financial support to sustain or lift up these farming units. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Leader, you don't have to ask a permission for you to engage department and give them proof of issues you're raising. It's your responsibility as a part of the oversight body as a public rep. And I also understand what you're saying. Agriculture, they cannot as a department give out money or allocate money and not follow up on how those monies are put. And that's us as a society. We have called you because we have appropriated money to do, and we want to understand how do you spend that money. Last year, when we did the other special appropriations, we were on the neck of the treasury. They must put conditions, and it's unfortunate. I want the treasury to say something as we close after you... Honorable Ryder, because they've been with us here, and I thought we will have enough time to also speak to this issue. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll try and be very quick. Chair, it's my comment is in response to the response from Agriculture Department. Chair, we must please remember, this is the Appropriations Committee. This is not the Agricultural Committee, who I'm sure would love to know about what's been done and get an update, etc., etc. If the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation asks me to go and make a presentation to them, I'm not going to tell them about all sorts of nice things that I've done in the past or how well things are going. I'm going to go to them and say, guys, this is what we intend doing. This is our track record, and this is the money that we need. Now, we're the Gates Foundation to government departments. We look at where money needs to be spent. So the response to say that you know, we did what was covered in the memo, well, that's noted, that's fine. Maybe if we can ask our secretariat then, when they dropped in the memo, to kind of be a little bit more specific and say our members would like insights into how the money that you've been given is being spent and how you'd like us to influence money allocated in future in future budgets, because that's what we're after. We are not the agricultural department. Let's leave that up to them. Let's talk about where the money is going, where we want it to be going. That's what we need to hear as the Appropriations Committee. We are not a committee that oversees the work of other committees. We are a committee that looks after allocating budgets. I want to make that point abundantly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ryder. I think we agree that we are not a portfolio committee or a select committee on agriculture, but we are an overall appropriations committee who appropriates money to departments and so on. And for us, to all of these participants today, including agriculture. It was an agreed solution to say agriculture should be part of that. And as we were engaging also, it was accused of other things, and we said for us to settle these things, we need to call them. And we must not regret calling them. This is the start of things. And we also say, going forward, we need to call, we need to call Department of Agriculture, for an example, or COCTA, or transport, together with a select committee that is specifically focusing on that. Because we need to be more worried if we see things not being done. Our mandate is specifically on funds, on finances. How are finances being spent? Are they speaking to the plans? Is there, we are also looking at the impact of the funds that we have appropriated. And the department, I mean, the select committee has a mandate that they are looking at. So we are not far from each other. I think we are nearby. Who else wanted to speak? Or Honorable Detroit, you want to step by?
Chairperson, I did put my hand up.
Oh, sorry.
And I put a note.
Honorable Karim?
Yeah, firstly, I mean, I agree with Dennis Ryder, and I also agree with you. As you said,
oh,
there's
on,
no...
Honorable Karim?
Yeah, I'm saying that I agree with both Dennis Ryder and yourself. We're not an appropriations committee.
Honorable Karim?
Said, yes, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Jefferson, you're audible.
Okay, in that case, very quickly, 30 seconds, if that's possible, I'll give Zolani some shock. One, we entirely agree with what Fani Jutoy says. It's horrific. He doesn't have to tell us. We see it ourselves, and others are also based in rural areas, I've said before. That's not the point. Secondly, I think if you've got examples where the practice is discriminatory, then you must refer it to the relevant department and CC it to committee members. That's all. So you know, the minister herself said, sent the complaints to us. She meets with the Agricultural Union, the TAU, and so on. Presumably, they will raise things, but he's quite welcome to raise it there. On the matter of finding out whether the departments do, in fact, spend the money allocated to them for disaster management relief, I don't see any problem, Chairperson. If members have got examples of that, to forward it to you, you can forward it to the chairperson of the relevant committee in the province. Then on Dennis Ryder's point, I agree with him, but I also agree with you. But basically, when we meet, as far as possible, we should draw in the relevant committees on the NCOP side. Thank you. Can Zolani comment in the WhatsApp chat?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson... Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, Honorable Chairperson? Thank you.
Yes, I can.
Honorable Chairperson, just in remarks to what Dr. Tao said with regards to the fact that the drought disaster status has not been renewed. In February, as I said earlier on, the whole of the country was declared a drought disaster area. We did not receive above average rainfall in most of those areas. And yet, Minister Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and the department decided not to renew the drought disaster status of not necessarily the whole of the country, but most specifically certain areas like the Northern Cape and certain areas of the Free State and other provinces. The fact of the matter is that when the decision was made not to extend the state of disaster, it was definitely not made on scientific information. If you look at the information, you've got that information available, it would have said to you that that grazing has been depleted to such an extent that even the little rain that fell this year could not re-establish those grazing. So I really think that it is of utmost importance that we must look into declaring states of disasters with certain areas. There are most certainly areas that received proper rainfall and that the drought is not an issue there. But I can promise you that especially the Northern Cape, the Karoo areas, as was mentioned, the Kalahari areas that are very arid, those areas need to be declared drought disaster areas, and we need to do it very quickly. Thank you very much.
You might be spot on, Honorable Okam, but like Honorable Eunice, Honorable Ryder, and I commented on how do we have to take the issues forward. The issues that certain areas need to be declared the disaster areas, that could not be our mandate. And I think you can maybe lobby or talk from your caucus to say this should be a matter for discussion in the select committee for agriculture and other departments that is focusing on agriculture. So I will advise that we do that because we don't have the mandate to can decide and say to the minister, this is these are the areas that you should declare them disastrous. So having said that, honorable members, I'm a little bit agitated because the meeting that I'm going to share, it needs a quorum, but I'm going to request Treasury to speak. Who's leading on Treasury to comment on the discussions that we have had? Very fruitful discussions, I might say. Treasury? Who's there? Lubabalo, who's there?
It should be Mr. Ngobeni, Chairperson, or Mr. Daga, and Mr. Daga, Directors. I think so.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hello. Can you turn on your video, please, sir?
Okay, can you hear me, though, Honorable Chairperson?
Yes, we can hear you.
Very okay, can you see me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm Mesabeni Ngobeni from the National Treasury. Chairperson, I just want to indicate that we have also listened in to all the presentations. What I want to take from the meeting, and also I would like to agree with the honorable members around the need to strengthen the monitoring of the use of funds that are allocated for disaster related activities. I mean, in as much as if I can give you statistics, for example, from 2016-17 onwards to date, about 6.4 billion has been allocated to drought relief projects. Now, we don't have a good handle of where that money went to in terms of the items that have been procured. However, it is safe to say that most of it was related to the water and sanitation interventions around the boreholes and things like that. So we do accept the issue of gaps around the strong monitoring aspect. We have heard you, honorable members. We're going back to the drawing board to try and fix those kind of issues. They've been in our radar for a long time. However, given the severity of the disasters, and they are not going to abate anytime soon, I think we need to show you value for money around the allocations that have been made. And I think this is what broadly the honorable members have been calling for. So we will deal with that and report appropriately as we move forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I was not going to be a happy person if Treasury wouldn't have spoken. Honorable members, let me take this opportunity to thank you. We will not be able to support to deal with the other items that meeting. The Babalo, can you indicate maybe members don't have, for those who don't have the agenda, can you indicate what is our thinking that we are deferring?
It's the, okay, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, it's the two sets of minutes, Chairperson, and the report on the FFC submission. I don't know whether we're going to go ahead with it because you have indicated that you need to go and chair another meeting.
Yeah, that's the problem. I have to go and chair another meeting. We could not adopt last week because other members didn't attend and I cannot be absent as a chairperson again and make the meeting fail. How long is the report? Remember,
the report, it is not long. It's just 2 pages, Chairperson. 70% of the report is just a framework of what happened, how we deal with that. But the key issue is the last paragraph, Chairperson, just to adopt. This report is structured in a way that we don't even have observations and recommendations because we are just acknowledging the submission of the FFC. Those submissions of the FFC will be responded to by the National Treasurer and other departments in the Division of Revenue of 2021, Chair.
Okay.
So if we were to go ahead and members are happy, within 2 minutes we would be done with that report.
Can I get a directive from the members on how you agree that we look at the conclusion, the last paragraph of the report so that it can be adopted? I hate leaving work hanging before I'm released. I don't know. Members, can you... This is a meeting. Talk to these issues. The last paragraph, which is 4, is on the screen. Do members agree that this is what?
I agree, Chair.
Chair, yeah. I note that this item wasn't on the draft agenda that got sent out, so I haven't worked through the document myself. Having a look at the commission decision, I don't really have a big problem with it, though.
Honorable Ryder, my apologies, I did not hear you. I was off the line. I was kicked off. Are you agreeing that we did this or you're saying we must say it?
Chairperson, I was merely saying that firstly, I note that this wasn't on the draft agenda that got sent out. So I haven't prepared... I haven't looked at it closely. However, looking at the contents briefly that's been put before us, I don't really have a problem. It looks straightforward, and I'd be happy that we move ahead. But just raising the flag, please don't do it again.
Okay, thank you for the warning. Secretariat, I think we have heard the warnings from the members. I thought it's part of the agenda, but the members are in a good mood today to allow us to present this report to them. Can I get a person who will speak to this recommendation or this noting on 4? Honorable members, I'm not kicked out, I'm still here. Can you speak to item number 4 of the report so that we adopt the report? Can I get a mover? It looks like there are no issues on the item.
Let me move for the adoption, Chairperson.
Sir Bong, as progressive traditional leader, thank you very much. That's what you yourself. Seconder, can I get a seconder, please, honourable members?
Chairperson, in the absence of your colleagues, let me volunteer to second the proposal.
You are my colleague as well. Thank you very much, Honourable Ryder. We are working together. For the minutes, Honourable Members, I'm appealing. Let's defer them to the next meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you for your participation. This is only the start. Going forward, we will assist each other, advise each other on how to handle matters. But I think I'm proud of how we handled the issues today. We were able to talk to the relevant people. And Team Finance, thank you also for availing yourself. You have heard, you knew what issues were troubling members. Going forward, and even when you go to other meetings, you will know what is it that is giving us as appropriations sleepless nights. Thank you very much, honourable members. We'll meet again in the next session. Keep well, stay safe. ESCOM is back in my rural area. Thank you very much. Bye, members.
Thank you.
And colleagues.
Bye-bye, Chairperson.